All right, and now we are going to bring on our special guest for this episode of the Book Wars Pod, and we would like to introduce everybody to Poppy Ashwright, who is the co-host of the Para Batai Pod. She's also a YA enthusiast, I think is how you describe yourself, Poppy?
Yes.
And YA enthusiast, Chris.
and YA enthusiast.
Nice.
Yeah.
But welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. Yay. On the Book Wars Pod, crossing universes a little bit.
Yes. Yeah, completely. A lot. Thanks for having me on. This is fun.
Yes, it is very good. I would also be remiss to not mention that Poppy's been very friend of the pod, very instrumental in helping us get set up because we had no idea what the fuck we were doing. And we were just like, yeah! I don't know how to like get anything on iTunes. How do you do that? And Poppy was just like, well, you do the thing. We're like,
okay, yeah. To be fair, iTunes is a bad example of this because I have no idea how we got on iTunes. My co-host handled that.
Fair.
Well, you told us, like...
I do all the technical stuff, and then she makes things do other things. That's, like, iTunes... She handles right. iTunes and, like, social media, and I just, like, record things.
It's like me and Kristen.
Yeah, sure.
You do things, whatever.
I do something. Okay.
Sure. You do all editing. You do more than the other of us.
Actually,
though. Okay, that's fine. Like, well, it's fine that you think that.
I love that this is a conversation that, like, other teams of hosts have, because constantly, I constantly tell Meredith, I'm like, you do way more than me. And she goes, you're the entire reason the thing goes on the internet. That's not even remotely true. I'm like, I mean, that doesn't feel like a lot.
I know, right?
Go team.
I mean.
That's what I'm saying.
I run the social media, which is basically I just sit on Twitter all day and make fun of people, so whatever.
Which you would be doing from your personal account.
Mm-hmm.
To make myself feel slightly better.
Yes.
It's true. We're really just hiding Kate behind a veil of mystery.
Right. Okay.
That's fun.
Yes. So, Poppy, what are you drinking?
What am I drinking? I am drinking bourbon.
Yum.
Buffalo Trace, to be exact.
Delightful.
Which is delicious.
That is.
And water.
I'm also drinking bourbon.
I pace myself.
Smart.
Yes. Good things.
Yeah.
We're actually not sure if we're going to just tack this onto an episode or make.
No, I feel like we are going to tack it onto an episode. So I'm drinking Buffalo Trace or Eagle Rare, excuse me, bourbon, just like I was or wasn't earlier in this episode, depending on what I decide to drink that day.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Yeah, we'll decide what the fuck we're going to do. As always, I'm sure it's not going to go anywhere near the way that we think it's going to go.
Of course not.
I'm drinking.
Are you saying that this is not going to go the way you think? Kristen,
oh my God. I need you to get away from me. I'm drinking Starburst IPA by Ecliptic, which I was drinking like a couple episodes ago. I don't know. It's good. We're running out of beer because Quinn's not drinking in January, so I'm drinking what's left in the thing. I'm putting it in my new Yeti. I got a Yeti Colster. I'm sorry. There we go. Okay. Cheers to me.
Cheers to you.
Cheers to Poppy, actually.
Aw, thanks.
Oh, yes.
Aw.
Friendship.
Kate is drinking swill wine.
I'm drinking swill wine. We're not going to talk about it. It's disgusting.
It's fucking disgusting.
Kate is drinking wine that I tasted and then promptly decided I was going to go get some bourbon instead.
I don't care.
Yeah. That's a sign of something.
Is it going to get me wasted? Yes.
Right. It's a sign. If only we'd been recording when I first tasted it, because that was a pretty great reaction, if I do say
funny.
So myself.
It was really funny.
Okay. Kate, do you want to ferret? I was just gonna say ferret, but that's not like the fairy. Do you want to ferret us through the outline? That'd be great. Oh my God, my brain has not been working all day today, and I haven't had coffee in like 3 days. So that's what it is.
Yeah, but speaking of queer.
Oh my God, stop. To be fair, Chris and I are in a weird mood right now, so this is gonna be fantastic all around.
Perfect.
All right, so. The reason, of course, that we have Poppy on is because we are reading Lost Stars, and we have promised in previous young adult genre book discussions that we would finally actually like get into the nitty gritty of like what exactly it is and whatnot. And so Poppy's great because she's read this genre very widely, especially more contemporary books and such like. Yeah. So yes. So actually, okay, I forgot to put this on the outline because I'm bad, but so first of all, this is your first foray into reading a Star Wars book. Yay. So
yeah,
how did that go for you?
Good. Well, it went well. I read the whole thing. I feel like that's a good sign.
That's because,
because if I didn't enjoy it, like even coming on your podcast, I probably would have just not finished it.
Right.
Because
yes,
I'm like that. So
in
anyway,
a good way.
Thanks. No, it was really good and I enjoyed it. And it was kind of funny because it took a while for me to figure out like where it fit into the Star Wars canon that I know.
Oh,
yeah. Remember there was like a moment where I was like, oh. Also, yeah,
that was going to be my next question is like, how easy or hard was that to follow for you?
I actually feel like, I don't know, unknowingly, or maybe you guys knew this, I just didn't know this. Like, you kind of picked a good person to read this book because I had never read a Star Wars book. And the only canon I know are the movies. Mm-hmm. So, like, for like a first venture into Star Wars books, it was accessible.
Yay.
And very interesting. And the only thing that was kind of confusing about it at first, but not really, was like a lot of time passes in this book. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of atypical for the genre. So that was like not very difficult, but also noticeable.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of wanted to talk to you about that also, just because obviously this is a YA book. It was marketed as a YA book, but just, you know, it starts us off when they're kids, which is not necessarily so odd, but then it ends when they're in their mid-20s, and I was just like, we're heading into different age range territory here. And so,
yeah,
I thought that was fascinating. But
I mean, it's definitely solidly a YA book, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's very clearly, like, written for a YA audience, and the two protagonists are primarily teenagers throughout the book.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily but fucking dummies throughout the book.
Yeah. I spent a lot of time being like, would you guys just, like, get your lives together? But then I also was like, I can't even say anything, because, like, as a teenager, I would have not been equipped to handle any of this. So
no.
Like,
absolutely not.
That's one of the things about being an adult who reads a genre that's, like, I kind of have to remind myself a lot of times, or every time I read YA, sometimes I'm like, how is this like 18-year-old more equipped at the world than me? Which I think is good, like, mm-hmm. but also sometimes sort of funny.
Yes.
Because sometimes I have like unreasonable expectations of YA protagonists, and then I have to remind myself that like I am solidly an adult and being unreasonable.
Yes. Yes. Super relatable. That's actually kind of a good segue into my first, like, meteor question. So I just want to talk about what exactly YA is as a genre. Like, how is it defined? Where are the boundaries for it? That sort of thing, just so we can get an idea of where we're at.
I am one of those people who really hates when YA is called a genre. because it's kind of really just an age guidance thing. Which is why you've seen, like, bookstores change their like, headings in those sections to be, like, young adult and or teen, but then, like, sci-fi, romance, whatever else, because, like, there are lots of genres for young adult readers, but it's, like, the children's section. It's a section that just tells you kind of who the books are intended to be for, and, yeah, roughly what, like, the age of the protagonists are, but like, it's not, using genre is a bit of a misnomer.
Got it.
No,
that's good,
like,
to know.
That's like a, well, and people disagree on that. Like,
okay.
People totally disagree on that, but I'm one of the people who thinks that you shouldn't call YA a genre. That's okay. Kind of neither here nor there, but anyway, the boundaries of, like, YA, though, are sort of, like, generally, you know, that it's written for teenagers and it's written about teenagers, and that's kind of it.
That works. That's easy.
Yeah. That's easy. It's not that complicated.
I mean, I'll take it. I mean, I feel like we spend so much time on this podcast trying to complicate things that just having nice clear-cut distinctions is kind of refreshing, honestly.
I like to simplify things, so maybe between the two of us we'll have like a nice complex middle ground.
Having defined the general, oh my god, I don't know what to call it now that I can't call it a genre. I'm just like making flapping motions with my hands, which no one
you can call it. Just use genre. I'm just saying, right. It's not like really a genre. Genre is, you know, like romance.
But don't tell her that. I want to watch her try to find a word the whole podcast.
Fuck.
Quest.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think I just belched into the microphone. That was really unintentional.
What are you... Okay, you're... Okay, Kristen is burping. Chris is saying random words to try to dog
my
thoughts.
Also, you can just say...
That was a Lord of the Rings deep cut. Our listeners... At least one of our listeners got that.
Oh, my God.
At least one of our
listeners. This is not the Lord of the Rings pod. Can you fuck off?
I contain multitudes.
Jesus Christ. All right, anyway. All right. Shit. Okay. Things I'm saying. So, we're talking about this category grouping of books. Haha, keeks. And so, I think, as you said, obviously, these books are written for teenagers, but we've really been experiencing this, I don't know if it's sudden, but it's been this building interest that adults have in reading more YA books.
Hey, Twilight, thanks.
Yes, I was just going to ask you.
True.
Where did that come from?
Twilight.
Why is it still happening? Yes, go.
I mean, kind of broadly, the answer is Twilight, among other things. Harry Potter, when it ages out of middle grade into young adult, helped. And lots of other book series have obviously helped. Like, The Hunger Games had a huge adult audience. So, lots of series have, like, had, I guess, that quote-unquote crossover appeal, but that's kind of why YA had the big, I don't know what one would call it, like, why it, I guess, took off.
Why Twilight, though? I didn't read Twilight. I know shit about shit, so you have to tell me why
because
adults like it.
I mean, literally there's something a lot that of... had to come out of that.
Yeah, okay. I'm one of the... Yeah, I'm so hit or miss on Twilight. I change my opinion about it all the time. Because I'm a person. Like, I read Twilight during the big Twilight thing. I like a lot about it. I don't like a lot of other things about it. Like, it's a book series that, like, I enjoyed when I read it. But I think you can also, like, be critical of things you can enjoy, obviously. You guys know that. and...
Do we know that, guys?
Yes, I've listened to your podcast. You know that.
Yes, we. I know.
Oh my gosh.
And you can also like only like something like kind of for its time or its season. Like, I'm not a diehard Twilight fan. Those people are cool. But yeah, like I liked it when I read it. I went to the midnight release of the last two. Like, I was a pretty big Twilight fan. But
well, and you were you an adult at that time? I don't know anything.
I was.
This is my favorite question on the podcast.
I was in
how
college.
How old were you when Twilight came out? I'm like, how old was Han Solo like the first time he was on the Millennium
this
Falcon?
This is one of those like, funny things too. Know, where I forget sometimes that I'm older than you guys. When New Moon came out, I was 19 or 20. So, okay. Yeah. So Twilight came out in 2007. Sure. So I would have been 19. People who can do math now know how old I am. I'm not a person who can do math. So anyway, yeah, Twilight was kind of the big, like, boom moment for YA for a lot of reasons that if people are interested in, they can Google, because I will get it wrong if I try to tell you what it is off the top of my head. Honestly.
That's fair.
I've, like, read all the commentary on it, but I can't, repeat it. I didn't put it into my memory. It's the same thing, actually. It kind of is born out of, YA kind of gets a bad rap in the same way that, like, romance novels get a bad rap, but, like, people read a lot of them, and basically the bad rap is bullshit, so... and Twilight is, at its heart, a romance novel series, so...
Yeah. You're also a big romance reader, right?
Yeah! I read a lot of romance, yes.
I remembered something.
Yeah!
Yeah! I read a lot of genre fiction, what can I say? and I generally think that people should always be making out and never talking about their feelings. So,
cool.
I mean, that's like the entirety of Lost Stars. So, like,
I know. It was really, really satisfying in that way. I was like, yes, just keep pausing to make out. Good job, guys. This is a thing that we talk about on Meredith and I talk about on the Parabatai Pod all the time, because she constantly loves when the characters, like, stop and have these, like, heartfelt moments. And I'm always like, guys, you're on a rescue mission. Like, what the fuck are you doing? Keep rescuing people. Like, don't talk about your feelings right now. And then she's like, okay, but if they pause to make out, you don't care. And I go, that's just different action. They're just still being active.
I mean, I feel that this is, like, not only the perfect first Star Wars book to give you, but also just the perfect book to make you read generally, because they're doing all kinds of things. They're like, oh, we'll talk about it later. Like, well, we'll have this conversation later. And it's just like, oh, God, you dummies.
No, and it's so
except
great,
for
and it's
like,
perfect.
Also not.
Because it's like,
we'll never see each other again.
Oh my God.
Also why it's perfect.
Yes.
It's so angsty. I read so much angsty. The romance genre that I read most is, like, just people just having so many misunderstandings, and, like, there's a lot of self-hatred involved. And it's angsty, and then they find true love, and then there's a lot of making out, and it's really great. So
I'm also an angst monster, so I'm totally on your side with that.
Yeah. Related, if you need some really solid angst romance novel suggestions, I have a whole list.
Excellent. All right. So
anyway,
I think you've already talked about some of this, but there are, I mean, I'm sure there are just, like, myriad reasons why adults are reading YA and pretending that they don't, but
boils down to adults are assholes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, kids are assholes too.
It's true.
Just to be fair, people are assholes.
Yeah, but true. Like,
Keatsy, it really sounded like you were just, like, repressing some, like, high school memories when you said your kids are assholes too. Okay.
Oh my God.
I mean, that's true, but yeah, I have a lot more, like, forgiveness to give kids than I do adults.
That's totally
my
fair.
Expectations of adults, I feel, are reasonable. Own your shit, including reading YA. Okay, thanks.
Yes. But what do you think, besides obviously the angsty making out, are some of the larger themes and such that still resonate with adults that they're just like, oh yeah, I should pick this up and I should definitely read it, even though it wasn't written, you know, for them necessarily?
I mean, I think for adults, there's a little bit of, like, having already... I mean, I think this is true of YA in general, but, like, also true of this book specifically. Like, having already been teenagers, we have a very different perspective on being a teenager because it's not so immediate. And for me, and personally, and other people I've talked to, like, sometimes seeing teenager protagonists do, like, really brave, difficult things is really inspiring to, like, get your shit together as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is really true in this book, because I said somewhere earlier in the episode, like, I would not have been remotely prepared or capable to do half the things that Thane and Sienna did. Like, I think sometimes we think that, like, you know, teenagers don't have agency, which is bullshit. And this is a book about agency. So I think that's a theme that resonates. I think the sort of contrast between agency and order also is one that resonates, because even if you're not like in the military like these two kids are, you know, we kind of become, I don't know, lazy about the ways we give in to things that order our lives, you know, mm-hmm. organizations we work for, like communities we live in, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's totally true. I mean, you know, it's a cliche, but also super true that that's just the age you're at, where you're just like, what if I just question literally everything?
Yeah, and I think there's like, adults severely underestimate teenagers a lot, and like, there's a lot of like putting young people kind of down by being like, oh, well, you're not old enough to get that, or like, you're not old enough to do, which is not true. Like, even as a teenager, like, you're making choices and those choices matter, and like, you're asking questions and those questions matter. And you know, you're living out a life that impacts other people, and that matters. And I think in being an adult who reads YA still, like, and like, not all YA novels are that deep, which is totally fine. Like, not all novels are that deep. But I think most literature touches on those things in some way. You know, you just, I don't know, you like learn the human experience by reading about it. And mm-hmm. like, young people have as much, whatever, buy into that as anybody else.
Yeah, totally. So, Poppy, you touched on this a little bit, maybe a lot bit, but just talking about why it's just considered, you know, I think that's the general assumption, is that it's a lesser category of book. Like, I was writing reviews for Lost Stars, and people were like, well, it's a YA book, but it's really good, and you should read it anyway.
No, right, yeah. Yeah, because it's like the same thing. Sorry to bring this back to romance for the 18th time, but it's the same thing where it's like, ew, well, it's romance, but, and it's like, okay.
Yeah.
That's like the whatever, when people are like, yeah, that person was a really great leader for a woman. And right. Then I just want to punch him in the face.
Exactly. So it's just, I don't need these qualifiers, guys. And I think a part of what you were saying about how, you know, teenagers as a group are often underestimated by adults, I think that carries through probably into how people frame these books.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and it's always, the people who write those reviews are always adults, and being an adult talking about YA books, I feel like it's a good moment to like say that, you know, YA books are written for teenagers, so while adults have, you know, good insight sometimes, like, our opinions on it really don't matter that much. Like,
that's such a great point.
It's not for us. Like, we can like it, but it's never, ever, ever written for us. Like, this book was written for teenagers. So it's great that adults like it, but it also doesn't really matter.
That is such a truly fabulous point, which is, which I feel like we've been talking a lot about that just generally in the Star Wars fandom, because
we definitely have. I was just going to bring that up.
Oh, yeah. There's just been, Poppy, you're probably not like so deep into Star Wars fuckery that you heard about this. But there was just all these really idiot fights in the lead up to the release of the new video game, because the protagonist is an Imperial and a woman of color, and people are all just like, this is bad representation. And all, of course, all the people who were saying that were white people, and all the Asians over here in the corner going, Jesus Lord. So
yeah, I always find it not surprising at all, but whatever, something.
Yes.
Shitty. <I'm>
yeah. Like, when white people,
I don't know what
people,
you're gonna say, but
well, when white people usually, but really anyone who has any, you know, identification along a like majority power line, so white people, men, white women, you know, rich people, like, whenever they like pick up these like mantles to be like mad about things that like aren't really their, like, I don't know, that don't really affect them personally. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely.
Like, yes. When fucking people stay in your fucking lane, white people.
Yeah, like when, you know, people don't vote for somebody because it's like, well, the, you know, minority voters are disenfranchised. And it's like, yes, but did you notice that all of the minority voters came out and voted for them? Because that person is still the right choice in this, between these two people, which is how voting works. Like, like, yes, please also do all of the good work you should be doing to change that. Like, that's good, but stop voting for third-party people. Oh, my God, that's not how this works.
Oh, God. We could have a whole other podcast about that because we all feel the same way about that bullshit. I don't
know. But, like, I mean, yeah, that's kind of the thing. So that happens, I think, sometimes with, you know, well, you see it a lot with representation. And, like, I personally don't experience it a lot, but I have experienced it enough with, like, men and how they will sometimes get mad about, like, women's issues. And I'm like, yeah, but that doesn't offend any woman I know. Like, you just right. think that offends us.
Right.
I mean, and
yeah.
Or sometimes that it's like in that way that things are complex where it's like, yeah, it's a little bit offensive, but also it's still moving the needle in the right direction. So like, I'll take the needle movement and keep working at it.
Oh my God, nuance.
I know, it's really hard. Which, to bring it back to Lost Stars, I actually think this book did nuance really well.
Mm-hmm.
Can I have a really shallow moment?
Yes.
Okay, I really love the name Nash, like, yes. Just oh, so as a weird, like, blanket rule. And so I was like, when we started reading about him, and then things kept going kind of worse and worse and worse, I was like, kind of pissed that I had to hate him. Because I was like, I really like your name, but you're an asshole.
He also sounded really hot, but...
Yes.
And it was a problem for me.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted him to be a good guy.
I know.
Not to spoil things.
Yes. I mean, now this is... Spoilers are open game on this podcast, so... Fucking go for it. And another hunch that I have about why people tend to look down on YA books is that a lot of the conversation around it is super gendered. I don't know if you've gotten that impression or if you know generally what in recent years the publishing breakdown has been for YA authors between male and female authors, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think the assumption, and it would probably bear out in statistics, is that, like, teenage girls read YA the most. I don't actually have any idea what the split is right now on, like, male versus female authors. Probably white men and white women. It's probably close to equal with men still in the lead, but probably the narrowest margin.
Right. I feel like just society. Yeah. Like,
I feel like it probably tracks. It's probably, like, pretty predictable. It just tracks the usual, like, you know, demographic breakdowns of everything. Which is why it's super important whether or not you like Twilight that Stephanie Meyer was so successful.
yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely gendered. And it's gendered because, right, like, not only do, like, are teenagers sort of looked down upon generally as, like, being too young or, like, you're not... There's a lot of agency that we tie as a society to being an adult, you know, like being 18.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of ties into, I think, how we look at young adult literature. And then, of course, right, like teen girls are denied their agency all the time, which is why YA novels are really important, especially YA novels with, you know, female protagonists are really important.
Right. Yes. Absolutely. If we're saying that a lot of adults look down on teenagers, then, like, teenage girls are just the lowest of the low in that sense. Which is great.
Well, and I think, like, that people, you know, will read, like, a book that has big crossover appeal, so adults will read it. And this book probably does because it's a Star Wars book.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment, a lot of Star Wars fans are adults. Like, you know, the original trilogy is, like, my parents' generation. And then the prequel trilogy is our generation. which is something.
Yes.
And we're all adults now. And so, mm-hmm. like, the new movies are, I'm going to be real millennial about it and just say I can claim both. Even though there I'm an go. Adult now. But, like, you know, they're the first Star Wars movies that are, you know, being made and released right in a time when, like, young people are watching it and can engage with it as young as being young. And, like, to be fair, when the prequels came out when I was a teenager, like, that was the cool, like, the best thing ever. Like, when we got Star Wars movies, because, like, I had grown up watching the original trilogy and loved them. And then when you got new ones, it was like, this is the best thing ever.
I had no idea how bad they were. Not a fucking
clue. No, I was 9 and I was like, this is great.
No, I loved them. And I still...
I was like, I want to be a pod racer when I grow up. Still, and my parents were like, I don't know what you're talking about.
I still love them a little bit, even though some things don't, like, hold up as an adult.
Sometimes.
But, like...
Rampant racism. Storyline.
Abusive relationships.
Yeah. I mean, lots of things don't hold up. But, like, that can be sort of the balance, right? That's, like, maybe worth discussing, and not in a way that condescends to teenagers by any means. But, like, at the same time, when I was a teenager, like, I didn't really get that Anakin and Padme were in a really abusive, controlling, manipulative relationship. Like, until it got really, really, really... Until it was the point, I guess.
Like, yes.
Until he accidentally killed her.
I know, right? Like, it's at least, like, force-choking her. I'm like, oh, that's bad.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no. Bad, bad.
You know, or, like, that we have all this, you know, future awesome technology, but that, like, women's healthcare is still so bad someone can die in childbirth, and then arguments that she just gave up the will to live because she knew Anakin was dying somewhere is just such... bullshit for a female character. Get out of here with that.
Yes.
Especially for a female character who just gave birth. Like, get out of here with she wouldn't be fighting for her life for her kids. Like,
oh god.
Even though motherhood doesn't have to be everything to, like, isn't, you know, whatever, everything to every woman. Like, Padme was written that it mattered to her, so get out of here with that crap.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Hashtag free Padme. We're a hashtag free Padme podcast.
Yeah, we are. So, but, like, when I was a teenager, like, I didn't really pay much attention to that. And that being said, like, I think the, like, origin story of, you know, Darth Vader's a pretty interesting, like, story to tell. Didn't really hold up in a lot of ways. Is not every part of that's very good. Like, clearly every subplot bends towards that main plot in a way that undermines the subplots, but...
All right, so this is an article, a post, whatever, I don't know, internet things, that I've mentioned on the pod before, but it's I think it was from last year or the year before that, but it was on LitHub, and it's called "If Fiction Changes the World, It's Going to Be YA," which is kind of a bold statement, but then you go into it and you read it, and it's basically about how YA books generally have a shorter publishing cycle than... quote-unquote adult literary novels or whatever the fuck you want to call it. And therefore, they are closer to current events and can better address social issues or, you know, whatever issues are obviously affecting teenagers. I guess, like, a really prime example right now is The Hate U Give. So, I don't know. I guess let us talk about that. Generally, especially because I'm interested in your thoughts about what the future of YA might be, just looking at social movements and social change, and that feeds a little bit into Lost.
Yeah, it does.
Also, but anyway.
I mean, I think that YA has a flexibility in that, and this is, again, kind of generalizing, because this is not, like, not true of adult fiction. I just think it's more prevalent in YA fiction. Like, there is an assumed fallibility of teenagers. Like, teenagers are expected to get things wrong and, like, expected to learn or not learn from those things. which kind of allows them to address, like, the learning curve of life, I think, a bit more immediately. And also, as a teenager, like, everything is more immediate to you. Like, everything is, like, so important because you haven't quite, I don't know. Like, one of the things that happens when you grow up, right, is you sort of, like, learn to compartmentalize things and, like, put things off and be like, that's not really important right now, this other thing's important. But when you're a teenager, like, there's a reason, like, if your, like, crush doesn't ask you to a dance, it seems like world ending. And that's okay, like, that's not frivolous. Like, the immediacy of everything as a teenager is an important part of, I think, what gives YA novels a really, you know, compelling power in storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's really, like, important to note is that, like, that timeline in the teenage brain is a lot different, right? It's like they can almost, I mean, I've been trying to remember back to when I was a teenager. but, you know, like, 14 to 18, there's so much shit that happened that, like, is not quite comparable to, you know, 10 to 14.
It's like almost...
Time dilation is a weird thing because...
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, like, 14 to 18 were, like, yeah, like you said, so much happens and, like, you do so much, like, growing and figuring your life out and... Then, like, 18 to probably 25 is kind of the same, but it starts to slow down at the end of that. Like, not that I haven't changed in the last couple of years, but it's smaller because, like, I'm older. I've kind of figured it out. Which also makes...
And you just have more perspective on what's going on in your own life in the future and in the past. Whereas when you're a teenager, you don't have that because it kind of seems like nothing before you're 14 exists and you have no idea what anything after you're 18 is going to be like despite, you know, thinking that you
do. And like you have a lot of, you know, I think it's that balance between, I keep mentioning agency, but like the balance between having agency and not having agency before you're a legal adult, whatever that, right, like, line in the sand is a weird one to walk. Like, because at some point you are just really, you can only sort of do so much because you have to do things that, like, adults tell you to do. And that can be really difficult.
I still feel like your brain is in this growing place where it's just like, every stimulus is equally important.
Yeah, and that's like, yeah, like, that's like scientifically a thing, right? Like, mm-hmm. Your brain is like on overdrive.
Right. It's like literally your teenage years are just, everything always happens so much.
Well, and I think it's like good because it's kind of like before we start like compartmentalizing and repressing things, like, and which is, like, also a good thing. Like, it's a good thing when you, like, learn that you shouldn't, like, react emotionally to everything that happens to you.
All right. All right, Poppy, speak for yourself. I've been repressing since I was young.
Says a person who reacts not emotionally to anything.
Same. Me.
But, yeah.
No, one thing that I really enjoyed about Lost Stars, just to kind of bring it back to this specific book, because I know less about YA as a category, not a genre.
Yeah.
But more about Star Wars, obviously. And one thing that I really appreciated about this book is that it was able to tackle some really interesting themes in tandem with, like, kind of the standard coming of age tale of, you know, they're like 18 to 23 or however old they are for the majority of the story. And you have them answering some really tough questions about what is the Empire and what should the goal of good government be and what are your loyalties to Empire versus to family versus to love. And so, like, I feel like those are some really interesting themes that this book was able to tackle because it was a YA book.
Right, and which has become, like, these issues are also, I mean, this book was originally published in 2015, but these issues are becoming so horribly, horribly fucking relatable right now. Like,
What about how not to be a Nazi? Yes.
That yes, is in exactly. Fact correct. Exactly. Well, how to not be Nash Windrider.
Yeah. Yeah. God, I'm so mad because I love his name. And then he's like a fucking terrible person. But like, it's also, he's also interesting to me because, right, like, think about what the Imperials did to Nash Windrider. And he still like is so, he like clings to them because it's all he has. Like, and mm-hmm. that is heartbreaking.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
he's I mean, still he basically has Stockholm really, syndrome, yeah, right? Like, he's still a terrible person. And at some point, you have to own your shit. But, like, it's really, really, really just heartbreaking that he clings so hard to this because it's all he's got. And he's got so much right. anger then to channel, which is kind of the point, right? Like, that's the horrible, evil strategy there, is that, like, if you take away what everyone has and you give them a lot of anger, all they can do is channel that anger for your purpose. Like,
exactly.
He was perfectly manipulated.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, it's really only a... It seems to me like only a really fine line that separates Nash and Sienna by the end of the book. Because Sienna is also just totally broken.
Yeah, no, it is a really... When she has that moment of being like, the only thing I have is figuring out how to, like, you know, die.
Die.
which is fucked Yay. Up. In a yep. way that, like, gets me out of... Gets her out of the, like, trap she's in. Without undermining her sense of honor and duty, because that's the most important thing to her. Because at some point, someone in the book, I don't remember who, think he was a Grand Moff of some kind. But at the beginning, he, like, shows mercy to Thane and Sienna. And then later, Sienna says, like, oh, well, we've met, but you won't remember. And he says, oh, the two kids from the hangar. And then he says something like, I'll have to recruit more from whatever her homeworld is. Jellucan?
Jellucan,
yeah. And then as the book progresses, you see that Jellucan has been taken like more and more under Imperial control. But also by the end, like even Sienna's dad is like, even if the other half of like the honor relationship has like... not acting honorably, like, you still have to act honorably. So, like, even though all this horrible shit is happening, he refuses to act dishonorably and, like, follows Imperial rule to a letter. And,
God.
I totally think that happens because Grand Moff Tarkin has that second run-in with Sienna and is like, ah, you should take control of Jellucan because their code of honor is going to make them perfect Imperial citizens. And then you see in the end that that's yep. very true.
I know it's so
interesting. I don't think that's a point. I don't know. I don't want to speak for the other people on this podcast, but like we've seen so many other worlds like totally fucking.
Oh, ravaged, I mean, they also ravage them for like oh. you know, it's just good to ravage worlds resources. When you're evil, but
right.
it's just good to ravage when you're
it's a
evil.
Pastime.
That's the name of the episode. It's always good to ravage worlds.
I mean, I'm pretty sure if you're evil, that's like
you're not wrong.
A prereq,
right?
Your number one hobby,
seriously. But no, that's such a great point though about the way of life with the Valley Kindred, because I definitely didn't think of that. I mean, I wasn't surprised when they totally ruined this planet because
it's
the Empire.
Well, because the like, Empire, yeah, right. And also, we've been reading. All these books, obviously, on this podcast, it's like every single book, it's like, okay, how many planets are they going to fuck up this time, you know?
Well, I don't know. Okay, they have two fucking Death Stars, and they couldn't seem to find enough ore for the first one, but somehow they made another
one. I know.
So fuck me, right?
It's wild.
I do love how, like, kind of, like, once you know the, like, secret code, it's easy to, not easy, but, I mean... relatively easy to blow up a Death Star.
Oh yeah. It's hilarious.
Like,
I know. Well, that's like the whole Han joke.
I know.
How do we blow it up?
Exactly.
Look,
Hans right.
Like, at some point, you can probably explode it. Solid yes, precisely. Plan. When in doubt, add C4. You're good.
Yeah, the Endor ambush was just such a bad idea.
Yeah.
I know, right?
Side note. That was just such a poor, poor idea on the Emperor's part. Oh, just like,
man.
100 years of planning goes into that moment.
We should.
And you fucked up. Anyway, we'll talk about this in a future podcast.
We need to, like, borrow somebody who knows about these things. Just be like, let's talk about shitty military tactics in Star Wars.
Oh, my God. Please find someone that will come on your podcast and talk about that, because I want to listen to that. I also always find the, like, military aspect of Star Wars super interesting.
Oh, yeah.
It's so interesting. I mean, wait, what was, like, the first thing that we read with the Imperial Navy?
Probably Thrawn.
I don't remember. What?
Thrawn, probably.
Was it Thrawn?
Well, I mean, yeah, Bloodline
had the New Republic, you're totally right. It's Thrawn. We're like, we didn't know how to pronounce any of the ranks or what anything meant.
Oh, yeah, it was hysterical.
Yeah, it was great.
Are they just Navy ranks, or are they made up Star Wars ranks?
Yes.
I think they're probably Navy ranks.
It's mostly...
No, it's Navy ranks plus Moff.
This is not remotely my story, but the person whose story it is, I don't think will be mad because we make this joke to each other all the time. But basically, there exists a person who, like, really liked, like, Star Trek and space stories, et cetera, et cetera. I actually don't even know if it was Star Trek. I'm making that up. They like stuff in space. And she had him watch a movie about the Navy, and person said something like, oh, it's like space but in the ocean. And she said, no, the Navy is in space. That's how space things work. It's the Navy
in space. So good.
And so now
that's so good.
Anytime we talk about basically anything Navy or space related, one of us is like, it's the Navy in space.
That's so good. And so I guess this is a question that's for everybody, really. But
except for Chris.
Yes, precisely. We like to talk about, you know, the forum or the category or whatever of, whatever we're reading or discussing.
Genre.
I guess, so the question I have right now, is why do we think Lost Stars, like, why did the story have to be a YA book, and what is it, basically allow us to explore the Star Wars universe, and I guess, you know, as a piece of literature as a whole that an adult book wouldn't have allowed us to do, in a quote-unquote an adult book.
I mean, I think we've kind of, you kind of get the impression that, like, the Imperial Army and the Empire, like, recruit young, so it kind of makes sense that eventually there was a, like, a book from that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And
remember when they made Thrawn go to the academy?
Sorry. Oh my god. He was like
maybe like 30 when he went to the academy.
Yeah, he was basically like the equivalent of a 40-year-old in human terms. It was ridiculous. Anyway.
Look,
they're like,
adults,
go to the academy, and he's like,
sometimes
teens.
Adults have to go to school too, Kristen. That happens.
Listen, this was a racism thing, so I just need to be clear about that.
Okay.
It's a speciesism thing. Excuse me.
Right. Yeah. No, it's true. And it's,
you would like Thrawn, Poppy. I'm just going to throw that out there.
He's very much...
Thrawn is the shit.
Robot brain.
Oh, cool.
That's him. I like that. Just because, like Kristen was alluding to very gracefully there.
Sorry.
Fine. we have seen definitely like scenes from Imperial recruits going to the academy. Clearly they're like 18 years old or whatever the fuck, but never from like such a close-up perspective, which I think has been interesting. And it also, you know, really allows us to get at the ground level of Imperial indoctrination.
I think one of the things that's really interesting about this book is the two different reasons Sienna and Thane want to go to the Imperial Academy. Like, their common ground is that they both love to fly, but the, like, reason Sienna wants to go is because she wants to be a good citizen and servant of the Empire, and the reason Thane wants to go is because he wants to get away from his abusive family. And Those are like two very different reasons why you join the military. So the book opening when they're nine, when Jellycan's just been like, I don't know, taken into the Empire. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's an actual word for that.
It's annexed or
whatever. Annexed, thank you. By the Empire. And, like, the Valley Kindred thinks that this is, like, going to be a good thing. And so do the Second Wavers. But, like, Sienna and Thane, like, bond over the fact that they both love to fly and they both want to join the military. But for... they have really different reasons. And then the rest of the book sort of follows how those different reasons take them down two very different paths. It's like important, I think, that it starts that early, like that we get that as the starting point in the prologue, I think, so that, you know, you kind of have that understanding of their characters.
Yeah, definitely. And also just the situation that they're in, like you were saying, how they both have super, super different motivations for joining the Imperial Navy. I mean, that's just really, really real. I think you can probably pick out veterans who, you know, they're still, like, they'll finish their service and they're still patriotic and they really believe in the institution of the military. And you've got people who got super fucking disillusioned and they will tell every kid they see not to join up. Like, it's...
yeah, and I mean, you sort of see that with, like, you know, our military is a huge factor in, like, scholarship funds. Like, people go to college by joining the military. And that's a good thing. But, I mean, there's some things you have to also consider about that being a path to higher education. Like, there are pros and cons.
Totally. Absolutely.
And, yeah, like you said, like, people also live out different lives in the military. Like, there's a difference between being a combat veteran and not being a combat veteran. That doesn't mean either person, mm-hmm. like, wasn't, you know, didn't, like, serve their country in an incredibly valuable way, but those people have different experiences.
Chris, did you have?
I mean, I thought it allowed it to be a little bit more character developed on just the two characters than we see in other Star Wars novels. And, you know, Poppy, obviously, this is, you haven't read the other Star Wars novels.
I haven't.
I mean, specifically comparing it to Thrawn, which we were talking about, I mean, that novel is told from, like, five different perspectives.
Right, but still from the Imperial perspective.
Still from the Imperial perspective, but, like, from, like, five different characters. And, like, this one, obviously, is just Thane and Sienna. Mm-hmm. And I feel like one thing that it did allow it to be a little bit more character and a little bit more plot-driven, like, in a really interesting way, I felt. I don't know. Maybe not, though.
I would agree with that. I haven't read any of the other ones, but I generally agree with that about, like, narrow focus perspective novels. Like, I've never been a person who does well with too many perspectives. I'm like, okay, I can't care about any of these people.
But it's great, though, right? Because, like, it gives us a story that wouldn't be told otherwise. Like, it gives us a story of, like, we obviously have, like, the Luke Skywalker and Leia Organa perspectives of the original trilogy mm-hmm. years, but here we have Thane and Sienna, who are the same age, and we would never know what it feels like to live in the Empire from their perspective if it weren't for a book like this, because an adult novel just wouldn't tell that story.
It wouldn't, because, like, adult novels, one of the things about, like, starting with an adult novel is that, like, your character always has the agency built into being an adult. And again, not that teenagers don't have agency, they absolutely do, but it's a different kind of agency. Like, there's an ownership of choices to being an adult. Usually, not always. Like, and adults too are put into shitty circumstances that they have to make the best choices they can out of, but it kind of falls in that. One of the things that I like about this book is that, like, that Thane grapples with and then Sienna starts to grapple with is the idea that, like, even Thane having, like, made the right choices by the end has to deal with the fact that for some amount of time he didn't. And he's still responsible for the stuff that happened in that time. And, like, you know, the idea that, like, making the right choice when you've been making a wrong choice for so long is like the hardest thing you can do. And it only gets harder, I think, when you get older. But.
Well, yeah. And the deeper you get into that wrong choice.
Yeah, exactly.
Kendi kind of talks about that a little bit.
Yes, she does.
Kendi.
I love Kendi.
So do I.
Poppy, you want to look into your crystal ball or whatever the fuck? so just curious about your perspective on how Lost Stars kind of continue certain trends in YA and what those might be, and then any future predictions that you have for where the category might be going or like how it might be growing, that sort of thing.
I mean, I really don't have a crystal ball. I mean, I think that like Lost Stars was really interesting in light of like social change and in light of just like, I don't know, learning to make choices that you got like to do something. And that like which is one of the reasons I think Thane is like the slightly more not compelling character. I don't know. But like,
I agree.
He has a more full arc in this book than Sienna does. And like you see him like kind of joining the Imperial Navy for selfish reasons. Like he just wants to get away, which is a good reason because he has an abusive family. And then, and like, it's important that he got away from that. Like, so joining the Imperial Navy is, a really good exit strategy. And then when he figures out that, like, he has that, like, realization about how he needs to leave the Imperial Navy. And that's, I think, what set him up to be able to do that, though, is that, like, Thane has been needing to flee from something for so long that, like, leaving something behind is not as hard of a choice as it would be for Sienna.
Who has, like, never left anything, never, on purpose.
Right.
No, yeah. Like, even leaving her homeworld was, like, an honor thing. Like, it wasn't... Which is why Thane's arguments to Sienna the whole time, right, are that, like... leaving the Imperial Navy is the honorable thing. Like, there's a reason why he makes that argument repeatedly. Because that's the only way, that's the only thing that would resonate with her. And obviously what doesn't resonate with her is the way to leave the Imperial Navy. But then he leaves and, joins that crew. But he still doesn't, like, do anything to, like, stop anything that's happening. And then he meets the Rebel Alliance, and then he is like, oh, wait, I should do that. Like, he was kind of always on a path, like, he had from his upbringing, which is a horrible thing, but, like, he had the kind of experience to, like, keep leaving things behind.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the complexity of it. Like, he should not have been abused as a child, but the complexity is that fleeing that let him make these choices that led him to be in the Rebel Alliance and made that a choice that he could make. Like, it equipped him for that, which is the complexity and bullshit of it. Like,
oh, yeah, absolutely. And there's also just that element of, I don't like bullies sort of thing.
Absolutely. But then even within that, like, he says that he's a pessimistic rebel, which I love.
I know. I love that so much about him. I love that.
And then, like, at the end, he's, like, being slightly optimistic, and he's like, I don't really know what to do about this.
I know. He's just like, what is this feeling of hope in my body? And I'm just like, oh, Thane.
I know. I really appreciated that. But
I know.
Anyway, all of this is to say that, like, that's kind of an arc that I think can only really be captured in a YA novel, because so much of, like, growing up or coming of age is about the, like, control of agency you gain as you age. And I think that under both an Imperial and a Rebel Alliance perspective is really interesting and important. And, like, Thane and Sienna both make choices as, like, teenagers and young adults that, like, I would not be equipped to make now as, like, solidly an adult human being. Like, and that's that's humbling and, like, important to read as an adult. This kind of realization that, like, yeah, I do pretty good in my life and I try to do stuff and some of that stuff is hard, but, like, it could be way the fuck harder.
Right, exactly.
And then maybe I should push myself, like, you know, not be the pessimistic Rebel Alliance person. But then beyond that, I would actually like to see, I don't know if this is, like, the future of YA as a thing, but having now read, like, a YA Star Wars novel, I would like to see kind of more YA crossover stuff. Like, it exists.
Mm-hmm.
I've never really read any of it, but yeah. It exists, but it's not particularly prevalent. You're kind of starting to see that with Marvel a little bit more. No, DC. You're seeing, yeah.
Yes.
Let me get that right. You're seeing it with DC. I should get that right because I'm a DC person.
I was going to say, I feel like there's a whole segment of Twitter that's screaming at you right now.
What's hilarious is that it would also be me.
Nice.
I'm a DC person, not a Marvel person, so... Which is why I even knew those books existed, and then I got it wrong. Go figure. Yeah, so there's, like, the DC crossover. All of that is, of course, like, driven by the fact that all of this stuff is based on whether or not it's making money, so...
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah, there's that little hitch, you know, normal things.
Yeah, it's a business. They gotta make money. Anyway, I guess my takeaway is that, like, it's a really good, like, if you've never read a Star Wars book, good entry level. I don't mean that condescendingly. You'll be able to ground yourself in, like, movie canon if that's where you're coming from. I feel like if you've never even watched the movies, it would still be, like, there's enough of, like, description of scenes that were from the movies and then expanded on that would ground you even if you've never seen the movies.
It's definitely a great jumping off point.
Right. I mean, we get asked all the time, like, I want to read the books. Where do I start? And I think this is, I absolutely agree. This is a fantastic one, which is why we had you read it so you wouldn't be confused.
Thank you. Which is funny because I was, like, momentarily confused, like, the first, like, kind of movie scene you come to. And I was like, wait a second. This is familiar. And then I was like, oh. Because I, like, read, I didn't even read, like, the jacket copy. Like, I read nothing. You guys were just like, read Lost Stars by Claudia Gray. And I, like, got it and was like, okay. And then just started reading it. Like, I had zero idea of what was happening.
I actually like not reading the book jackets, but that's my stupid non sequitur. Poppy, if you ever want to read another Star Wars, I can, I will gift you Thrawn because it's very good. Yeah. And I think that's probably the one that you would like the most. Even though you don't watch Rebels, I think it would still be the best.
Okay.
She doesn't need Rebels.
So I know. Thrawn stands alone. Me and at Southernson
excuse as real blue boyfriend.
Blue boyfriend.
It's Keeks' blue boyfriend.
Oh, cool.
All right. Well, we will let Poppy go because we've already taken a significant amount of your time. But Poppy, thank you so much for joining us on the Book Wars pod today.
Thank you for having me. Can I say one more thing about Lost Stars?
Yes.
I, like, really loved the love story.
Right? Oh, so good. I was just
as a person who reads a lot of romance, I could not leave without saying I really loved the love story and the complexity of, like, loving someone that you don't agree with all the time. That's real life. Yeah.
So good. Like I appreciate all the angst, but there's a small part of me that just got to the end and was like, I just want them to bone again and be happy.
I know. Yep. And spoiler alert, people have sex in YA novels. Get over that misconception.
Oh my god, people have
this
sex.
This was my first YA novel I know. Where people had sex, I think, but I was, like, barely literate and my wife.
We've read a YA novel where people had sex, okay. Kristen.
Wait, which one?
Rebel Rising about
Jin had sex in Rebel Rising.
Oh, that was a YA Jin novel? Had sex. I had no idea.
Oh my god.
What?
We definitely talked about how it was a YA
I'm
novel.
I'm sure
dude.
We did. Was that the second book we read?
It was the first.
First book you read.
Well, that explains why I don't remember it.
Even Poppy knows that's the first book we read. Jesus Lord. Anyway.
Of course y'all. I do. I listen to your podcast. Like, I'm aware.
Oh my God. I don't know why you do that.
Well, Poppy, we don't want to let you go without telling us about the Parabatai Pod and about what your project is and where people can find you all on the interwebs and can listen to the pod.
Cool, I get to plug myself.
Yes, you do.
So, the Parabatai Pod is a podcast that I host with a co-host named Meredith. And we talk about lots of stuff. we talk about the show Shadowhunters, which airs on Freeforms on Tuesday. No, yes, Tuesdays now at 8, 7 Central. And the show returns on March 20th. And we also read the Shadowhunters Chronicles series. Kate, was that remotely the right, like, how do you pluralize series?
It's still series.
Well, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's pretty stupid.
Series is.
many
Cassandra
series.
Clare's,
yes.
Shadowhunter Chronicles, of which there are multiple series. And then there's, like, a movie that we've covered, and then we do a lot of, like, one-off stuff about other things in the fandom, because it's a pretty extensive universe to cover. So, anyway, that's what we talk about on the Parabatai Pod. It's a fun show. It's really good books. Multiple book series. all YA. Hey! And you can find us all across the web. If you're interested in listening to our show, you can do that at theparabataipodcast.com, where all of our episodes are. You can find us on Twitter at theparabataipod. You can find us on Tumblr, theparabataipodcast.tumblr.com. We're on iTunes if you search for the Parabatai Podcast. We're on Spotify soon. maybe now, I don't know, if you search for the Parabatai Podcast. We have an Instagram, the Parabatai Pod, and of course you can find me, Poppy Ashright, at Poppy Ashright on Twitter.
Hey, Poppy, can you spell Parabatai for me?
Yeah, I can.
Exclusively for Kristen.
Not our listeners. I don't want to insult our listeners, just for me.
If you need to find us on Twitter, which is really the social media we use the most, it's at THEPARABATAIPOD.
And we'll put this in the description and tweet it out as well from...
Yeah.
I assumed, but I love
it's
spelling.
A Greek word. I don't take any ownership on how that's spelled. It's a Greek word that has to do with when you fought side by side with people and you like put your shield over them. That fighting unit duo is called a Parabatai.
Oh, that's
anyway.
Cool, actually.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's actually really cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
Fun fact. Fun fact.
You're like fighting partner in ancient Greece. So, anyway, we have a podcast. I think it's fun. I do it every week. that's kind of everywhere you can find us. And it's a lot like this one went, but with no swearing. But with much drinking.
Yes.
Honestly, I'm more impressed that you drink and are able to not swear.
I know, right?
No swearing.
That's
clean
awesome.
Podcast. Well,
I've
clean
never
by
not sworn in my life.
Clean by
iTunes standards.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which means I can say certain words.
Ha ha.
But not other words.
Yes.
You can't say hey, fucking Chris, where can the people find us?
Or I can't tell Chris to eat my ass.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. All right.
No, you can say crap and damn and oddly bullshit, so.
Oh my God. But not shit by itself.
No.
Huh.
Only the shit of a man.
Actually, I don't really know about that last one. I have said it and still
I think it's just bullshit by itself. I think it's like similar to FCC rules, but continue.
Anyway. So, yeah, we drink a lot, though, on that podcast. We have, themed cocktails. We drink a lot on that podcast.
That's fantastic.
That's excellent. We should consider themed cocktails.
Yes.
It's really fun.
Hey, Chris, where can the people find us?
They can find us on Twitter, on Facebook, Instagram, and Tumblr, all at BookWarsPod, and over email at bookwarspod@gmail.com. And they should also rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, Google Play. So, Poppy, thank you again so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You are so, so welcome. And listeners, thank you for joining us for this episode of the Book Wars Pod and for reading Lost Stars with us.
Let's put a poll up tomorrow that says, what Star Wars book should Poppy read next?
Oh, I like that.
I will 100% read it.
Yes. And
use your listeners to force me to read Star Wars books.
Speaking of what books to read next, after this, we are going to be reading Phasma by Delilah S. Dawson.
Hey, I know who that author is.
Hey!
Oh, hey! For next week, join us in reading the start of the book through chapter 13 of Phasma by Delilah S. Dawson. And thank you again for joining us. Our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and I lost the outline. Hang on.
Our logo and artwork is
our
by
logo
Joby
and
Tara
artwork
Design.
Are by Joby Tara Design. Thank you so much for Kate, Kristen, and Poppy. I am Chris. Thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you soon.
We're all laughing at
together.
You.
We're all laughing at Chris.